MMAMadhouse.com would like to thank their sponsors, Draco Impact Armor, Clench Custom Mouthguards, Cast Iron Supplements, Brawl Base, Pro-Am Belts, Game Changer Clothing, Never Tap, Hype Fight Store, Intimidation Clothing, Ink Tank Tattoo, 24 in LV, Crossroader Clothing, Central Oregon Trike, Triumph Fitness, Vision Smoke Shop, Tank Crimes, Big T's Nightclub, and ACS Live TV. Always supporting local MMA, you're listening to MMAMadhouse.com live.
Selection. Check out this selection right here.
Where you from?
Critically acclaimed, lyrically acclaimed, self-proclaimed. Nobody calls you nothing except for your mother. And she spurred your monkey ass.
Lepaki, my partner in crime, welcome to episode 145 of Madhouse Live. Tonight we got a killer lineup talking MMA from coast to coast. How are you doing, brother?
Dude, oh my god, I don't even know right now, bro. it just blows my mind, man. Some of the things that I read on the interwebs is just absolutely mind-boggling, bro. Like, I really think that this guy doesn't think Anderson Silva deserves to be the middleweight champion of the UFC.
Oh, that's funny.
I can't even say this shit with a straight face. He's talking about back-to-back-to-back subpar performances. And I'm, like, sitting here thinking to myself, what was the subpar performance? Finishing Bonner? Nah. Finishing Chael? Nah. Not the second time. Maybe the first time was a subpar performance, but he still finished the guy. Was it knocking out Okami? Nah, it wasn't that one either. Was it knocking out Forrest Griffin? No, not that one either. Damian Maia, maybe you could probably say it was a subpar performance. What about Salah Sweet? You probably even say that too. Vitor Belfort, that one was subpar for sure. You know, the first front kick KO in the UFC, that's subpar. Oh, wait, maybe it was like the fucking perfectly targeted knee on Chael fucking Sonnen in the second fight that was subpar, because that looked pretty fucking laser-like to me. I don't know.
Hey,
I'm just telling you, bro, this is the shit that I read.
Okay, but let's look, let's just kick this show off right. That's a great way to start this show. Tonight, folks, we're going to start with Joe Warden from Destruction MMA. Joe, how are you doing tonight, brother?
Man, I'm doing great. Sitting out here in Missouri. Out in the middle of nowhere, Missouri, you know. I feel
what was the heat index today, bro?
What's up?
What was the heat index today?
Oh, man, it was cold here. I don't think we got above 80 degrees.
Oh, that's it. You guys don't get that much in July, bro.
Oh, we never get that in July. Usually, you know, it's 110 here. Last year, 110. This morning, I woke up this morning when I feed the horses, and it was 56 degrees.
Oh,
holy
wow.
Mackerel.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So look, Lepaki was touching on, you know, people's perceptions of a subpar performance. Now, you're a great coach. You have a phenomenal gym. You got some really tough fighters coming out of your gym at every level, from pro to amateur. How do you deal when one of your fighters, win or lose, has a subpar performance?
You know, I always tell them, you know, I'm the coach that, you know, I don't like to kick a dog when he's down, but I always tell them as soon as the fight's over, you know, win or lose, when we get back to the locker room, cutting the tape off, I tell them, you know, hey, this is what you did good, this is what you did bad. This is what we got to work on. This is what we don't have to work on, you know. You know, you guys, you know, I shoot it to them straight. If we have a subpar, man, my guys know, they know when things aren't going, you know, if I'm not happy with the performance, they know when they come back to the locker room, they're like, oh, no, this is going to suck. Because I'll tell them right then, you know, look, I don't care if you lost. If you lost because the guy was better than you, hey, it happens. If you lost because you didn't do what I told you to do and you didn't listen to me out there, you know, that's we handle it different ways, different fighters, you know. It kind of just depends on who it is, but I definitely don't pull any punches with them.
Now, I got to ask you, with this kid, you know, you've got a kid who obviously is making big waves down there, Alex. Is it Alex White?
Yeah, Alex White. Yep.
He's fighting a pro at 145, correct?
Yeah, he fights at 145, yes.
Now, I know a little bit about you, talking to, you know, some people and doing some research. This kid, Alex, how much of your experience in the sport and earlier before it became as popular as it is today has become an influence on getting this kid to where he's at? Because from what I have seen and what I've read about this kid, he's pretty much a beast.
Oh, man, the kid is a beast. He, speaking of subpar, you know, his last performance was, people were thinking it was subpar, but what they don't realize is he broke his hand 3 weeks before that fight, and we fought anyway. We fought the number 150 ranked guy in the world with a broken hand, and he rebroke it 30 seconds into the fight. You know, so he was only able to throw jabs and hooks, lead jabs, lead hooks, the entire fight, and we still won. So, and people were like, man, he just didn't look like himself out there. Well, apparently not. He only had one hand, you know. But this kid is a beast. I mean, he cuts from 175 to 145. He's 6 foot, left-handed. Never had a background at all when he came to me. He, you know, he never boxed, never wrestled, never did anything, and just took to it like crazy. And his first 2 weeks, I put him against some of my better guys, and he, you know, he did well. I'm like, man, this kid might have a future in this. So the kid, like I said, he is an animal. He was 16-0 as an amateur. He's 6-0 as a pro. He has not lost a fight since 2008, and that's including boxing, Muay Thai. He's 38-1 total combat sports.
Holy shnikes. So let me ask you, as a coach, you know, you just mentioned you kind of got this raw ball of clay to work with. What, you know, we talk about this all the time on the show, and I just got to pick your brain. Which do you prefer? Do you prefer a fighter who is athletic or an athlete that can fight?
Oh, man. An athlete that can fight, I guess. I mean, it kind of depends because, you know, if they come in with a background at all, sometimes I have to break bad habits. You know, and they, you know, they've been doing for who knows how long. You know, you got your college wrestlers who've been wrestling for, you know, 15 years, but they still have bad habits that they've been doing for that long, and I got to try to break it for MMA. But then you got these kids who are raw that whatever you tell them to do, they do because they don't know any different. So, I mean, it's kind of a, I don't know, man. You're kind of looking at it. That's a tough question. That really is a tough question because, you know, you're looking at it two different ways. You know, like I said, you're either breaking bad habits or they've been doing it for so long that they think, I know everything. You know, and then you're trying to tell them, no, you don't know everything. You guys got to listen out there. But these young kids who don't come in with anything at all, man, they're so impressionable. You just tell them, do this. And they don't question you because they don't know any different. They're like, oh, okay. Well, you know, and that's how they win. You know, this kid, like I said, he ran track, so he's got an endless gas tank. And that's all I really needed, you know. Back, you know.
So with today's kids that you're training, you come from a background in a sport that me and LaPocky are huge fans of. You come from the stand-up game in the kickboxing world. I know that you went to the tryouts recently, and what do you see different from the days of the kids when you were training and coming up in that sport versus today's kids who are training in MMA? Is there a big difference mental-wise, physical-wise? Do you see any differences?
They're more, what I see the most of now is these kids are starting as a kickboxer. Back when I started, man, I'm giving away my age, but when I started, you either kickbox and then you had to go somewhere for judo, you had to go somewhere for something else, you had to go somewhere for something else. Now you got everything under one roof, and these kids are just, they're just becoming athletes, all-around athletes. Back when I was 12 years old, 13 years old, I've got a 14-year-old kid right now. He's going to be better than Alex when he gets up that age. He is just unreal at 14. I'm talking big. He's 5'10", 175, 180 pounds. He's 4-1 in Muay Thai. He wrestles in high school. I mean, this kid, but that's what it's going to take nowadays, is start out early. But they all got it all under one roof. Back when we all did it, we had to go different places all the time. And that kind of got old, So I think they're better. I don't know if they're better athletes now or if they just have better training facilities, where they don't have to travel all over and they got everything under one roof.
Well, with your gym, you obviously are able to help these students and these athletes in every field. What if, a kid comes in and just wants to go that route of glory or super combat or KSW or K1 or wants to be a max TIE fighter and doesn't want to mess with the MMA game? Do you still work on producing that field of athletes as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm actually on the advisory board for Waco Kickboxing for the U.S. team, and I help coach on those tryouts. That's what that actually was. I help coach that. So we got coaches from Minneapolis. We got coaches from Florida, Georgia, and I help in the Missouri and around here. And I'm also the head coach for the U.S. MMA national team, so I travel all over the world. When guys come in, I've got kids that just want to kickbox because they can't do MMA. So I do. I just do kickboxing, but I still on ground days, I still have them come in. I'm like, look, you can't just bypass it right now. You've got to train it all. If you want to go to the MMA, if you want to just do kickboxing, then we're just going to do kickboxing. I'll do kickboxing tournaments. I'll put them in. We do Golden Gloves every year. I find club shows for boxing we do, and I put these guys in it. Well, guys that just want to do that. I have no problem with guys who just want to do stand-up. Now, actually, that's where I'm the greatest at, so that's where our MMA guys are all strikers, too. So they like to fight, so that's what we do.
Well, especially today with the influx and growth again that kind of died off in the late 80s, early 90s of the kickboxing and Muay Thai fights, it's back and it's getting bigger and better than it ever has here in America. Obviously, it's always been a prevalent sport outside this continent, but it's so nice to see. And it obviously, getting Alex a chance to spar, with a world champ like he got to last week. I mean, things like that are just invaluable lessons that a striker only can teach an MMA guy.
Absolutely. He was a seven-time IKF world champion. He's got the most wins in the IKF history. Where are you going to find that at? You're not. If you get that kind of a chance to spar and train with these guys, why not? Why not do it? And I do see kickboxing making a comeback. With Waco, we're doing a lot of training camps in Missouri now, because the new president's out of Chicago, and I'm actually good friends with him. So we travel, we do the kickboxing, and those tryouts were actually for the world championships in Brazil in September.
Oh.
So U.S. that's just be taking guys down for the world championships in Brazil for Waco kickboxing.
And you're definitely going to have to keep us surprised. Go ahead, Labaki.
I'm curious, because this is always something that me and Skippy talk about, and we really do get to talk to other people about it because so many people could care less about stand-up striking. But what do you think was the hardest part for America to grasp kickboxing or Muay Thai or even initially MMA, even though they were so willing to grab onto boxing? I mean, I grew up in the 80s watching a lot of boxing. But I also, noticed to make the transition in the mid-90s, when I first found the UFC, I was like, wow, man, this is really cool, too, and it's a whole different style. But I still embraced, all the styles. I mean, I used to watch kickboxing, in the middle of the night on ESPN. If my parents knew, they'd probably be hella pissed that I was, 11 years old and up at, 2:30 in the morning, sneak watching
Absolutely.
Kickboxing.
Yes, that's what I did too. I understand. You know, I don't know.
But, I mean,
I don't know why it didn't kick off. I really don't. I mean, other than, you know, U.S. fighters have we're pretty good kickboxers. But the problem is when we go overseas, and in most kickboxing tournaments and stuff is going to be overseas. So I think we kind of got burnt out a little bit because every time we go overseas, they're not on a 10-9 system. They do points over there. So all of our kickboxers are getting beat because we're getting outpointed. You know, I might knock this dude down, but he might jab me, and now we're tied. We're right back to the same points. You know,
yeah.
Here in the States, they do a 10-9 system. So the more damage you do, you know, you won that round. You know you won that round because you did more damage. Over there, you have no idea until the end of the fight. So I think guys kind of got, they were just like, you know, I'm losing fights that I shouldn't be losing because of points or because the judges see, you know, five jabs to, and they're not seeing my three, you know, whatever. I think guys were just kind of getting frustrated, and so it kind of died off a little bit. But I see now it's starting to surge back, man. Actually kind of excited about it. It seems to be coming back and more people are implementing striking in their MMA games now. You're seeing better strikers now, you know.
Yeah.
Because I tell my guys all the time, I'm like, look, man, the fight starts. You're standing when it starts. So
yep.
why not capitalize on that?
No, I agree totally.
You know, to touch on, you know, the kickboxing, something that I think is drawing fans back to this sport, which – because of big league promotions in MMA, they kill this. But in kickboxing and Thai fights, if you put on a good performance, win, lose, or draw, you're coming back. Records of win-loss in kickboxing and in Thai fighting aren't as important as they are in MMA. A fighter who shows up and performs well every time, even if he loses a lot, is still considered one of the best kickboxers in the world. They're not 80-0, you know. There's a few
right.
out there that have ridiculous records, but, you know, even Gogan Saki has lost, you know, even Badahari's lost, Andy Sauer, I mean, the list goes on and on, but nobody says throw him to the curb, whereas it seems that's more the mentality in MMA.
Right, right. In MMA, man, you lose three in a row, you're cut, you know? What's up with that? Even if you put on a good performance, even if you lose, well, you know, people are worried they're going to get cut. You know, kickboxing, I think kickboxing was more of a, yeah, let's go out and have some fun, man. We're just gonna go in there and, you know,
gonna fucking beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, we're gonna throw punches and kicks, and we're just gonna have fun. And afterward, win, lose, you know, hey, whatever, you know. So now it's a career, you know. MMA is more, you know, guys are trying to do this for a living, and they're scared that they're gonna get cut. Well, if they get cut, you know, that's a paycheck gone. So
and
it's a little different.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really unfortunate because, I mean, I would love to go to, like, a Glory tournament event and, like, then get into the after party because I have a feeling it may just be, like, something that would be mind-altering, like, seriously blow your mind because, I mean, the way that they put on their events, I can only imagine what the after party is going to be like.
Right, right. But see, I put Alex, when he first started, I put him in all kinds of boxing matches and Muay Thai fights, and now that he's pro, I'm looking to do, with Waco, we're doing pro kickboxing. I'm going to try to get some pro kickboxing matches, some pro boxing matches, stuff like that. You know, because, you know, his strength is stand-up. I mean, there's no doubt about it, you know. If you look at his record, all of his pro wins have been by submission, but it's because he gets taken down, because he doesn't have a, you know, they always take him down. So he has a nasty ground game, but his boxing and his striking is real awkward and real solid. So.
Yeah.
No, I think it's great to have guys that keep a mix like that because we're starting to see a little bit more of that up here with some of our pros that are starting to take that step to the next level where they're incorporating pro aspects of other events. Like there's a very consistent pro boxing card up here in Tacoma that they will oftentimes have MMA fighters on their cards where they can, you know, just focus on that stand-up and their footwork, which I think is something that a lot of guys that come from a ground-based background could really take advantage of because I think that not only would help their wrestling and their takedown defense, but would definitely start to separate them in the striking, just like knowing the proper footwork that like a pro boxer has to use and cutting off angles and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's where it's at, man. I go to all these different MMA schools, and I mean, I'm talking some high-level schools, and I'm like, where's your angles? You know, nobody cuts angles. They want to do more like the Rock'em robots where they go back and forth. You know, you can't do that, you know. I was always told a guy going backwards is a guy who gets knocked out, so why not cut the angle? You know, when you're having to come back out of a fight, you know, if you're having to retreat, don't ever go straight back. That's what I was always told. Never go straight back. If you go straight back, that's when you get knocked out. But you see guys do it all the time, and I'm like, where are your angles? You know, I scream at my guys all the time in the corner, you know, cut that friggin' angle. You know, if you're not cutting the angle, you're not doing it right. Now, I bust their balls between rounds. I'm like, look, something's got to give. You guys got to start using footwork. You know, that's all they ever hear from me. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's for sure.
You know, we talk about that all the time in Lepaki when we were breaking down whether it's an amateur or pro fight. You know, especially on our other show, our late night show, where we really talk in depth about certain rounds and stuff. You don't know how many times we've said, well, their footwork is what got them in that problem. I mean, a lot of people out there don't realize you can throw the best, hardest punch in the world, but if you have shitty footwork, you're never going to get a chance to set it up.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree 100% because I see guys that have horrible footwork and I'm just like, wow, you know, how are you guys even winning fights right now? I don't get it. You know, I see pros. When I do footwork drills, I do footwork drills with cones. I'll set them up in a triangle. I'll set them up in circles, and they'll circle in and out. And they'll circle around the cones just to get their footwork. And they, you know, I see pros come in to work with me crossing their feet. I'm like, when do we cross our feet? You know, whoever taught you how to?
You want
to
get
when you're doing ballet. When you're doing ballet.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe you guys are actually, and how many pro fights do you have? You know, I'm like, and you're crossing your feet. Who? Wow, okay. But, you know, some people just look, you know, and I'm more critical on the stand-up because that's my background, so I'm more critical there. You know, some guys are more, they don't care about their footwork because they're more worried about jiu-jitsu, you know, or wrestling or something, but, you know, I'm sure that some coaches could pick out some of my wrestling moves, and they're like, hey, why did you do it like that, you know? Same as me. We're just more critical because that's our background.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I think it's just I can look at a fighter, and if I can see his footwork, I can tell you what I will see, how good his fight will be. I can tell almost, like, especially at the amateur level, if I see a guy with footwork, I will normally assume that, like, he will win the fight because I'm going to take that as he's obviously going to be a little bit more athletic and he has a concept of how to throw punches or at least avoid.
Right.
And it's just like watching offensive linemen. I mean, people tend to, like, when you're watching an offensive lineman, people far too often just look at their upper body, but you can tell a lot more about how a guy is going to play, like, block and stuff like that by watching just the knee down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep, I agree.
Now, let me ask you, obviously, the footwork that you're trying to teach these kids in a cage is a little different than what if they're working in a ring. Now, when you were working with a kid teaching him to cut off an octagon versus a square, does it seem like they take that in easier than the square or harder than the square?
Well, in the square, you can cut people off, put them in the corners. So it's a little different in the cage because you can't actually corner somebody, you know. And in a ring, you know, basically when you're cutting the ring off, you're pushing them, you're throwing your, you know, jabs, your straights to put them towards a corner because that's where you want to put them in the corner to, you know, to let your hands fly, put the pressure on them. In a cage, you can't really do that, you know. And so I see. In a cage, you see these guys who don't have the footwork, so what do? They go straight back, and they hit the cage. Well, now your back's against the cage. Now you're going to get taken down. So that's another thing I see a lot of. If a guy's had footwork, they wouldn't have their back against that cage so much. They wouldn't have to worry about that takedown, you know, but these guys get taken down so easy because they're not cutting the cage off or they're going straight back and, you know, if you watch your great fighters, they know where they're at in there, and they won't put their back against that. Anderson Silva won't put his back against the cage. He's moving around. He's moving out. He's not going to do that.
Well, and if he does, he's able to sneak out, you know?
Right, exactly. You know? And another thing I've noticed people don't know how to do in, say, boxing rings is they don't know how to punch out of a corner. You know, if you're going to the left, you're throwing your left. If you're going to the right, you're throwing your right hand to circle out. No one knows how to do that. I'm like, how do we not know how to do that? They just stand there and take punches. You know? There's different things I look at and I'm just like, wow, I just can't believe, you know, biomechanics. You know, you should know how to, if you're going to circle out, you should know how to circle out. I mean, your body should want to do it naturally anyway. I think a lot of guys have put too much thought into it, maybe.
Joe, do you also think that maybe that's also the reason why some guys do not like fighting in a ring rather than they, because, you know, there's a huge difference in how you can even have an MMA fight in a ring in comparison to the cage because of the angles are more dramatic.
Like I said earlier, I'm the head coach for the U.S. National MMA team, Team USA, and I travel all over the world. And we fought in Italy. We did an MMA fight in Italy, and it was in a ring.
Oh, no, I know what happens. I'm saying that a lot of American fighters don't like to cage fight in a ring.
Well, it depends on who the fighter is. If you're a stand-up fighter, it's actually to your advantage being in the ring. You know, because you can use ropes, you can, you know, it's harder to take a guy down, you know, the ropes give. If you're a wrestler, most of the time when you find a guy who doesn't want to fight in the ring, it's because they're wrestlers or they're looking to get you to the ground.
I agree. They can contain you.
Yeah, because once you, you know, if I'm in a ring and I go for that takedown and I want to push you against a cage or into the ropes to get that spring off or to get that, you know, knee bump, whatever I want to do, I can't do it because you will fall through the ropes or I just can't get that pressure against you. You can spin out off the ropes and stuff like that. Most ground guys don't like rings. Most stand-up guys are like, oh, all right, man, they're going to have a harder time taking me down now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hey, Joe.
Dude, Joe, you're freaking awesome, bro. We got to have you back on.
Yeah, definitely,
that.
Joe. Look, before we run out of time with you, one, I want you to have a time. Anything you want to give shout-outs to your boys who won, the Intimidation sponsored fighter. We love Intimidation. They sponsor us. But whatever you want, social media, anything you want, any information, run at it.
Yeah, you know, we got Eric Irvin, who's sponsored by Intimidation. He's a great prospect at 155. He's 6-3. I took some bad fights for him early in his career. You know, he's lost to Ronnie Britt, who's 19-2. He lost to Charlie Brenneman. You know, we probably shouldn't have took those fights, but the kid will fight anybody. He's tough as nails. He's sponsored by Intimidation. He just won this weekend. Alex, he's fighting live on Titan August 30th on Axis. We got a guaranteed TV spot on there, so he'll be fighting on there. And, yeah, I'd like to shout out to Intimidation, who sponsors Eric. Animal Instinct, who sponsors Alex. Clinch, they just sponsored Alex. They just picked him up. Grateful for that. Will Hammond has been tremendous help for me, man. I don't even know. I've never actually met the guy, but he just seems we kind of clicked and he hit off. And, man, he's been helping me out with Alex a lot. He's the one that got me Clinch. He's done really good for me. And he's the one that hooked me up with you guys. So I want to, you know, I like to shout out to everybody. You know, anybody that's helped us along the way, you know, just if I forgot somebody, man, I apologize. It's hard to think, but yeah, anybody's ever been there for me, man. And you know, I was put in the Hall of Fame last year. I'm the youngest instructor to ever be put in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, guys who actually believed in me and said, "Hey, you can do this," I appreciate it.
Well, hey, I mean it. Like Lepaki said, we got to book another date and have you come on, man, so we can just kick back and talk more about the technical aspects of coaching and stuff, because that's something not only our fans, but me and Lepaki really get into. And Joe, I got to tell you, thank you so much for taking the time tonight to hang out with us on Madhouse Live. And I'll definitely get a hold of you this coming week, and we'll book another show for you just to come bullshit with us.
Hey, absolutely, man. I appreciate it. I enjoy it, man. And, you guys are cool guys. I appreciate it. And, hey, Destruction MMA, Facebook, hit us up. Get as many likes as we can. We're at 1,000 now, so let's try to punch that out. So you want to shout that out?
Oh, hey. Okay, before you go, though, I'm taking a poll. Anderson Silva or Chris Weidman?
Anderson Silva.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's whoever's saying that Weidman's going to win that fight and he's the favorite, I don't know. They're out of their mind. How can he be the favorite? He beat Munoz. Who's what? Top? Not, I don't even know. He's top 10.
Anderson Silva's won more fights in the UFC than Chris Weidman has had fights.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so he beats Munoz, and all of a sudden now he's contender. I don't know.
I think it's just one of those things where people like to root against somebody like Anderson or Floyd or the Gokensakis or the Roman Deckers when rest in peace. But in the day. It was cooler to be like, oh, I'm picking against him. And then if you happen to get like one out of every five or six right, you can be like, yeah, see, I told you. But you immediately forget about like the five or six where you were like, well,
yeah,
fuck,
absolutely.
Man.
Hey, I want to give one more shout out to Dane Moffitt, one of my pro fighters. He's doing his kid has turned around completely since he's came to me and moved to Iowa 2 years ago, trained with me full time. Turned his career around. He's won. I mean, he won his pro debut against a guy who was 5-3 with 30-second knockout, head kick knockout. He's making his pro debut in Des Moines, Iowa, July 27th for boxing. And I just want to shout out for him because he's turned his life around, done real well here lately.
Hey, that's real cool, you brother. And like I said, we'll talk to you real soon. We're going to have you back on.
Absolutely, man. Anytime.
Hey, thank you so much,
man.
Buddy.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, Ronald, you guys have a good night.
Hey, you too. Big shout out to Will Hammond for hooking us up with a great guest right there. Skippy, I figure you might have wrote that name on the wall, so I'll even give you a little bit of credit in that process since you wrote him on the appointment book.
Well, I got to say.
I mean, I figured it's the least I can do, right?
Yeah, well, everybody out there, you guys know we hang with a lot of different people in the sport, and one of the groups of people we like to traditionally hang with is management because they're tied to so many fighters, and we kind of get some cool access, and we get to meet a lot of cool gym owners like Joe from Destruction MMA. So, and hey, why don't you take over for a second? I'm going to check this out real quick.
Why am I taking over for a second? Okay, I just want to talk about, because this is really like perturbing me lately. And we don't normally talk about Zupa shit here, but I'm going to let this one fly right here, off the hip, off the cuff. I really don't give a fuck at this point. I just think that far too often people look at guys like Floyd Mayweather, and you can actually just go read this on my fucking Facebook wall, but this is what I wrote. People expect such perfection out of fighters that they overanalyze and critique everything they do, and it seems like they forget that guys like Floyd Mayweather, Anderson Silva, or GSP get the very best of every opponent they face. When people face guys like that, they take their game to a whole different level. Consistently, these guys continue to come out on top. We always say that we want to see greatness, and when we do, sometimes we take it for granted and root against it rather than embrace the moment and look forward to the day when you can look back on it and tell people, I saw Silva, Fedor, Hagler, Mayweather, Hearns, Gokensaki, Semi Schilt, or whoever it may be. People like these are the thing of legend, folks. It's okay to enjoy it for what it is. What's up, Skippy? You're interrupting.
I agree. I totally agree with your statement and fans out there. It's at, you guys find them on Facebook, LOPATI, or you can find them on Shane Falco on Twitter. Look, we've got our next guest in queue. We're not even going to screw around and waste any time. Gabe, you with us, buddy?
I'm here. How you guys doing?
Doing wonderful.
Fucking 90 degrees in Oregon, bro. You don't understand how excited I am. These people I work with, everybody I work with is complaining, and they're like, oh my God, it's so hot. Like, it was 90 degrees yesterday in Eugene. I work in Eugene, Oregon. They had a motherfucking heat advisory. 90 fucking degrees, bro.
When was the last time you had one of those?
I think heat advisory, like, I have flashbacks to living in Tulsa when it was, like, 128 on the heat index or 135 on the heat index. Like, that's a heat advisory. 90?
Right.
That's just warm.
That's just California. That's San Diego right now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just another Wednesday.
For everybody out there, I want you guys to meet Gabe Scarpelli, if I said that correctly, and he is the owner and promoter at World Combat Series, and you, A lot of people say that you're probably the number one amateur promotion in the state of California, if not definitely top three. Man, we got to talk to you, man. You do it just more than MMA shows. You're bigger than just that. So let's get down to the brass tacks, man. Tell everybody about your league.
Sure. We started World Combat Series back in 2011 and just been a humongous fight fan, martial arts fan since I was young. Growing up in the Bay Area, just surrounded by, you know, such great fighters coming up and being kind of privy to the world before it was really mainstream. And we wanted an opportunity to work with amateurs and young fighters to give them their opportunity to showcase their skills and hopefully get them ready for the next level. So we decided to go with the amateur rankings, and World Combat Series came about.
Now, I got to ask you, you know, with all these promotions coming up and going down year in and year out over the last 5 years, especially the last 2 years, in your state, I'll be honest, as somebody who follows a lot of the MMA down there, I've seen 15, 20 promotions come and go within 6 months or a year. What are you doing so different that you're kicking down doors and getting bigger and bigger crowds, bigger and higher caliber fighters?
I think our biggest and our first big intro into the industry was utilizing venues that were suited to, you know, catering to these bigger fighters and giving them that bigger showcase to work with. We started working with San Jose Convention Center last year. We did the San Jose Civic Auditorium, Santa Clara Convention. We were in Orange County. So we actually blanketed all of California just to make sure that we weren't just trying to be county territory. We were trying to be California territory and then branch out. So I think with the rise of, you know, instead of just doing a, you know, 5,000 square foot little room, we're doing 150,000 square feet and, you know, attaching, let's say, an expo to it or drawing other people to it. Because I think even though MMA is mainstream, we still need to give people a perspective that it's not just a barbaric sport. There's a lot of talent. There's a lot of time and effort that goes into this and a lot of families that support these guys through their, you know, early endeavors to make them get to the next level.
So you touched on that, and that's something I think is, like, just ridiculously sick, and I wish more organizations. You do the expos with your MMA series to not only enlighten other fans to what you're doing, but you bring – it's not like you're just – you got a booth set up with some health pills. I mean, you have all kinds of different activities going on at every level, at every kind of competition. I mean, you know, explain to people what else you're doing besides just the MMA at these events.
Sure. Well, in April, we actually had what's called the MMA Evolution Expo. And what we did was we tried to decompartmentalize mixed martial arts. So we want to create a better fan, a more educated fan. So that way when they're watching these young, talented guys all the way up to the pros, it gives them a better perspective. So we actually had a Taekwondo tournament. We had a Jiu-Jitsu tournament. We ran 9 different kinds of seminars, including boxing, judo, gi, no gi, wrestling, all the above, to give these guys kind of a different perspective. Then we had all the booths and we had the different events. That kind of was our forefront for the expo we did last weekend, which was the San Jose Fit Expo, which had powerlifting, bodybuilding, MMA, jiu-jitsu. They did the Gracie Worlds there. We had about 190 different kinds of vendors, so anything from bodybuilding.com, MMA, all the above, and I think it just creates more of a festival and gives everyone a lot more to do and a little more information on why we do it.
I just straight up, I love it. I think it's killer. It's a great concept to be able to come as a fan, watch some fights, or, you know, especially me, Labaki, and the fans like us, to watch some Brazilian jiu-jitsu or Taekwondo, or even powerlifting. You know, one of our good close friends and great sponsors, Clinch Cut the Mouth Guards, he was a powerlifter back in the day. It's something we all talk about. We see in this sport. What got you?
Dude, I'm getting into arm wrestling, bro. This shit is fun.
Hey, we did arm wrestling also. Arm wrestling was L.A.
Oh,
and you know, last year was the very first. We had the arm. You know, it's a side story, but we have the guy who drank the oil from Over the Top, and I'm sure everyone's seen that movie, Sly Stallone, and everything back in the day. He's like the spokesperson for Arma, so he comes out to every one of the events, just an incredible human being, and watch you guys. And there's all kinds of great athletes out there, and they're one of them, man. They are definitely one of them.
Dude, are those guys not the most fucking intense, bro? Like, they're crazy.
It is WWE with arm wrestling. I mean, nowadays, like, there's... I don't know how to describe it. It's WWE with arm wrestling.
Dude, we watched the live arm wrestling competition on Fightbox, and it's something that, especially over in Scotland, I mean, like, these guys come in, like, smacking each other in the face. They got, like, six guys, like, it's a NASCAR team. One guy, like, throwing in the mouth guard. Another guy toweling him off. Another guy massaging the arm. And they're screaming at this dude. And he comes over, and he's like, Toes elbow down, man. And these guys just screaming, like, all the veins pop. It's just a beautiful sport because it's literally two guys just mano a mano, power versus power. And it's great because you see such amazing battles just with the arms. I mean, any fan out there, that's great that you're doing this. It's so great that somebody like you has stepped up. And I hope other promoters out there listening, you know, follow this suit and across the country and do things like this, these expos where you can bring together fans from all these collective sports under one roof.
Yeah, and it gives, you know, people don't have as much crossover, right? You end up being real purists for, like, MMA, which is fine. You need your purists. But I think the crossover from all the other sports is there. It's just getting the attraction and the attention that it needs to kind of cultivate it a little bit more. So we found that the crossovers come over much further. I mean, we had probably 10% bodybuilders just in attendance. Phil Heath, who's Mr. Olympia, came out. He's a humongous Nate James fan. We ran some super fights this last weekend. And, I mean, it was like meeting, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger for him. It was a big deal. So now seeing that stuff's exciting because it opens the doors for a whole other fan base.
Now, I know with the success that you've been having from these, you already scheduled, I believe, an August 24th event at Pacific Beach, correct?
Yeah, August 24th is our next local event down here in San Diego. That's going to be just got off the phone actually with wrestling. We're going to do a wrestling tournament. They will have a powerlifting tournament. They will also have a strongman competition. And then, of course, a bikini girl contest. That's always good. And then we'll do our live fights in the evening time.
Will they be outside?
Yeah, it's actually our first outdoor event, or excuse me, our annual outdoor event. And it's down to, it's PB, it's near the beach. It's kind of a relaxed environment compared to what we normally do in, let's say, the convention centers. But we're in a beach town. You know, you got to kind of know your market like this. And it's fun.
So, and these festivals these expos are a one-day event. So, like, when you purchase your ticket, it's to everything, correct?
Yeah. Like, these are basically buy a ticket, get in. That's the main thing I wanted. I'm not a big fan of having 25 tickets just to get into everything. And, in fact, for our next year's event, like February 8th and 9th, we're actually going to bump to a two-day event, and we're going to make it all exclusive. We have 10 tournaments set up for that weekend. So I think we're going to try to take it big next year.
Dude, I love it. Now, we got to touch on the MMA a little bit. You have some fantastic fighters that have been on your cards. Are you doing the matchmaking for starters, or do you have somebody else doing that?
I have two matchmakers. I have a North matchmaker and a South matchmaker because I figure they know the territories best. Up North, it's Mike McNeil, and down South is Robert Brooks.
Now, I got to ask you, since you're not matchmaking, as a fan, you know, of mixed martial arts, how much are you getting out to see this talent that you bring in? Or do you just trust these guys 100%?
I trust them in, you know, 100%, but I go to as many fights as I can. In fact, when I was in San Jose, I went to the Gilbert Melendez Festival over at Marine World MMA Day, and then I was over in Santa Cruz that evening. I get out to Born to Fight. I get out to pretty much any and every fight card I can, because I like to scout the talent. I'm a fan at heart, so even just getting out to see these guys put on a great show and do their thing is great for me. But it gives me an opportunity to kind of meet them and greet them and figure out if we'd like to have them on the card, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, you know, as you bring in these fighters, you know, like you said, you have a North and a South. Are we going to see a time where you maybe bring some of those North fighters down
to maybe have a face-off North versus South Cali kind of deal?
We did one time, and we're due for another one. Last July, I brought up three Southern California fighters to meet up with three Northern California fighters, and it was fireworks. Because you know, I personally feel like up north is a lot of kickboxing. It's a you know, California and San Jose especially, you got a lot of old kickboxing gyms. You have Farthest Kickboxing Academy, obviously AKA, and all the big names. Down south, there's a lot of jiu-jitsu, heavy wrestling. So it blends really well. You can match up really good fights going north to south. We've actually got a couple guys from out of state as well. Because I tell you, California is really a hotbed for MMA, but there's about six or seven other states that are just enormous opportunities that no one's looking at now.
Not Oregon.
Well, we looked at Colorado, and we pulled actually one of Kat Zingano's students, J. Kev Hernandez. He fought Joe Neal this last December. We held the state championships at the Civic, and, I mean, that was an explosive fight. And it goes to show you, I mean, it's just opportunity. You know, it's time and opportunity for these guys. And we have no problem. We'll fly people out. If the talent's good, I have no problem. And that's something that the festivals afford us, you know. Gives us a little bit more leniency so we can say, hey, listen, this is a great talented, you know, guy or girl out of Texas. We need to fly them out because it's going to be a great matchup. And that's why I use my matchmakers because, again, they have their specific skill sets that make for great matches.
Now, I love the fact that that's how you look at this. And I'm curious, you know, you guys seem to be tied with Camel pretty well. What was it that made you go that route instead of staying away from Camel?
I'm a structured kind of person, and you know, Camo, everyone says, you know, there's flaws, there's, you know, perfection, there's no perfections. But, you know, what organization out there has perfection? Camo has provided us at least a structural, you know, guideline and has set some forth protections for the fighters, protection for the promoters, and given us opportunities. So I welcome with open arms, and they've never really steered us wrong. You know, they give us a lot more credibility as far as just having the judges. It's not my you know, cousin coming in and judging a match on Indian grounds or anything like that, which I've been to those fights. But you know what I mean? It just, I'd rather promote, make sure the fighters are happy, make sure they have everything they want, camps are all good, and let the state take care of, you know, what they need to.
I like it. You know, I wish we had up here in Oregon, I wish our commission was a little bit more minded like the commission that runs Camo, because, you know, look, you're right, there's flaws, but your minute flaws versus our large flaws, we had, what, five events this year total? No pro, well, we had one pro fight this year, right? I think that's it in the whole state. Where you guys, just last month, 17 events for Camo alone.
Yeah, and we had... Gilbert, on the, what was that, the 24th or the 22nd, there was five fights in a day. You know, it's incredible. But, you know, there's also a humongous talent pool. But, again, when you start doing that many fights and there's no structure, that's when injuries happen. That's when the fighters aren't protected. And, you know, without the fighters, without the coaches and camps, we don't have a show. So I want to do everything we can to make sure that these guys are fully licensed, fully prepared, and, you know, they know what they're getting into beforehand.
Well, I definitely, I'll tell you what, we need to be on your press release list at MMAMadhouse.com so that we can make sure that our fans around the country are seeing this product, because you've addressed this.
What about the fans in Canada? Do they not get to know?
And the fans around the world. No. Especially the fans in Brazil.
Well, you just said the fans around the country, bro. Like, you're, like, trying to get
around
engaged.
The world. Hey, I
Yorn's
apologize
listening.
To all the
Yorn
guys
is
in
listening.
Ireland, everywhere. Yorn. And it's Jørn in Norway who runs Madhouse in Norway for us. Sorry, brother. But, look, you've addressed this, and we've talked to so many promoters between the shows we have, interviewed a million of these people, man, and you have just an odd mindset about it. You address this completely different than, I guess, the blueprint that's been laid out that so many other people have followed. And I'm a big fan of what you're doing. And I just, the concept of bringing in all these sports and addressing MMA with a more structured system like Camo, I think it's smart.
are you going to try to just stay and dominate strictly California, or do you guys have plans on expanding, or do you like what you're doing right now?
You know, we love the Expos, we love the fights, and, you know, California, the goal for last year was really to expand north to south, and we accomplished that. So going into next year, we'd like to branch out in other states. We've actually looked at Washington, we looked at Colorado, we've looked at Nevada, and we'd like to go out and really kind of venture out and see what talent lies out there and see what we can pull together. So we're very interested.
Well, I would love to see you in Washington. I'll tell you right now, and LaPosh can attest to this even more than me, they've got some great, great amateur talent up there. And I'm not talking just MMA. You have a kid out, not only out of Eugene, Oregon, but a kid out of, I believe it's Everett, Washington. Both of them fought for Muay Thai World Championships at Siam last month, you know, which had 60 countries represented. You know, you got great boxers in MMA. So I think something like what you're doing would be just accepted so well up there because the sport is broke down like that up there. You have so many different bases of gyms along with top-notch MMA facilities.
Definitely, definitely. And they deserve a chance to showcase it, you know, as much as anyone else. And, you know, the big thing is, and this is kind of a shout-out to the coaches, is get their guys out there, let them train hard, and just let them, you know, get them to a point where they're ready to take fights anytime, anywhere. Like the gentleman before, he said, you know, the guy's willing to fight. He trains 24/7, and, you know, that's really refreshing nowadays in the fight game is, you know, don't just say we're fighters. Let's be fighters. If we're really going to go for this, let's step in. Let's be ready, be trained, and be prepared.
Now, that's interesting you say that because on the one hand, you're right. You need to be physically and mentally and in training to be prepared to be the fighter. On the other hand, how important is it for you that they're social media savvy fighters as well?
I prefer them to be social media, but personally, I have a marketing team, social marketing team, that actually handles most of it for them. What we do is if they already have a Facebook page or they already have any kind of social presence, Twitter, any of the above, we actually will do the work for them. We'll build the posters for them. We will help them post. And it does, you know, obviously it helps us promote ourselves. It helps us promote the business. But it does right by the fighters because a lot of them, they don't need to be social media, you know, gurus. They don't need to be out there just selling tickets 24/7. They need to be training and put on a good show. And what we can do for them, because we're afforded the people, is allow them to kind of do what they should be doing and then give us a little bit of access to help them out. And, you know, we all know that the fight game is a business, you know, and I won't ever try to hide that. And the minute that they are helped to realize the business aspect of it is the greatest minute because now they understand what they're, you know, preparing for.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And it's very interesting, though, that you guys have basically a department that will help these fighters so they can focus on training. Once again, doing something completely different, you're treating this group of amateurs like professionals and you're working with them at that same mentality level. I like it. I just like the way that you're presenting your product. And, you know, obviously all these other aspects to bring somebody for the day. I mean, you've got to have a great team supporting you, man.
I do. And, you know, I'd like to give a shout-out to them as well. And my vice president of marketing director is Mark Piga. We have George Jackson, who's just been invaluable to our team, Robert Brooks, Mike McNeil, and the list goes on. And Ernie Ramirez. I mean, the whole group really, we're on the same page, and we all have a similar goal. So it's easy for us to drive. And the majority of us were either competitors, athletes, fighters. So we kind of relate a little bit differently. Even though we have the business aspect of it, we relate to the fighters from a competitive standpoint.
So I got to ask, go ahead, LaPosh.
No, dude, I'm not interrupting this as an interview right now. My mind is continually getting blown by people. So I have to fight the trolls sometimes because I just want to, like, pimp slap trolls. Like, I just want to, like, sometimes I just want to, like, hold him down in, like, a Vanderlei Silva when he knocked out Keith Jardine with that rape choke and just fucking paintbrush him for, like, 20 fucking minutes, man. Just be like, do you remember this shit? And then just fucking, you know, like, just pop him upside the head.
It must be Wednesday. You got that midweek stuff coming on.
I'm glad I'm off for the rest of the week.
Well, Gabe, you know, we've got a couple minutes left with you. So first thing before we run out of time, I want to make sure that you have
hold
a chance
on, hold
to give
on,
a shout
hold
out.
On, hold on, wait,
no,
wait,
we're
going to
get to your question before we
okay,
give a
after
shout
he
out.
Does his stuff. Yeah, after
okay.
he does
no,
his shout
I was going to say, what I'd like you to do is be able to give any shout outs you want, and then Lepaki definitely has a follow up question.
Sure. The big thing is just, again, to my team, Mark Hager, Robert Brooks, Mike McNeil, Ernie Ramirez, George Jackson, you know, my sister, Marisa Scarpelli, my wife, my whole family. I mean, really, everyone comes together. I have such a great support network, and without the support network I have, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. So I just got to thank all of them and know that any fighter or coach out there, that my family is your family. We work together, and we all have a common goal, and we can get there very easily.
Now, where can they find you on Facebook and Twitter?
World Combat Series on Facebook and Twitter, also on our YouTube feed. The website is worldcombatseries.com. And, yeah, real easy to find us. Also, 619-333-0153. That'll get you directly to the matchmakers. If you guys have great fighters, we're always open and willing to look at them. And out of state, doesn't matter. We'll look for it.
Alex Corrales, Aaron Wolf, if you're listening, the number one 125er in the state of Oregon needs a fight. Aaron Wolf, get a hold of Gabe. I'll give you his information. Just hit me up.
Yeah, we just had a guy this last fight card. He's 4-0 now. Matthew Ramirez. This is a kid that I could see in the UFC very, very quickly. A very, very talented child. And I say child because he's 19 years old. And this guy is just black belt in Taekwondo, trains 6 days a week. He lives in the gym. And he's one of our – I think he's top three now in the state of California. So that'd be a hell of a matchup.
Oh, see, that's what I'm talking about. See, we need to get – and I know there's people listening right now who know Alex and his coach and stuff. And you guys hit Alex up, somebody out there, man. Alex is beating up all the 125ers here. I mean, it's time to ship him down to California and let him fight down there.
Yeah, I'd love to put it together. Yeah, no, if he's listening, call me, please. Let's see what we can do and talk it out.
And then
Rich,
they can bang
about.
It out. And then they can bang it out.
We'll talk it out so
okay,
they can bang
so,
it out.
I'm taking a poll tonight on this weekend and whether you think Chris Weidman or Anderson Silva will walk away with the UFC middleweight title.
I got Silva. I've got Silva. No problem. I just the experience, his talent, how many fights he's had, how many great fights he's had. I got Silva.
That's what I'm saying, man. Silva's just like, fuck, man.
Yeah, we were talking about
this.
This
reminds me of
reading
so much.
The magazine, looking at the article, and it's like, I'm looking at it. It's like, man, Tommy Silva does a pretty good job of matching these fights, and it's like, you know, this was. I feel it's overweighted on Silva's side.
I do, too. I just think that the experience of the kind of guys that Weidman, and I'm not taking anything against Chris Weidman for out those
not
people
at
that
all.
Listen. I think he's a great guy. But
yep.
I haven't seen him fight anybody that's on that level. He's had 9
right.
pro fights in his career. Anderson Silva has had 16 pro fights in the fucking UFC.
Yeah, and
like
they've
this,
been
this guy,
pretty top-level guys. He's not just fighting cans. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
He's
I think it's funny that, like, people that watch MMA today, and then they look back at, like, the Travis Luter fight, and they're like, well, he had no business fighting a guy like Travis Luter. Well, you have no business commentating on that fight because you don't really know the fucking situation at the time and how dangerous of a fight Travis Luter was. And if he doesn't
fucking have
problems, he was one of
the best in the world at jiu-jitsu at that day. At that weight class, he was one of the top jiu-jitsu practitioners, period, hands down, in MMA. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
That fight,
well, this,
if he wouldn't have come in drawn. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, this is why we wanted to develop the MMA Evolution Expo. This is exactly why. Because people who are not informed about jiu-jitsu or where it came from, or Muay Thai, or boxing, or wrestling, or any of the above, they look at MMA just MMA, and you and the group and everybody here recognizes the different talents and can argue these things because of the informity that we have. So I think that's exactly what we want to do. I mean, this is spot on.
Well, Gabe, look, we're going to definitely have you on. I shot you my information for the website. You just shoot us those press releases, man. We'll get them up there for you. You know, we definitely want to have you back on again, maybe when it's closer to the expo. Maybe we can get you to bring one or two of your fighters with you, or maybe one of the arm
sure.
wrestlers or something.
Heck yeah, man. Let's do it. I'm down. Sounds fun.
Well, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time tonight, man, and we look forward to talking to you again. I'll get with you on some dates in August, and we'll set that up. We got to pay some bills, folks, so I would like to thank, you know, Gabe. You guys go out there and check him out, man. I'm serious. He's doing big things. He's doing MMA right. You guys know my spiel, man. Screw Zuffa just one time this year. Take one pay-per-view away and go down to an event like Gabe's putting on in August and support the local MMA scene. Support the sponsors. Buy a T-shirt. Go buy some, you know, vitamins. Go buy a pair of gloves. Get out there and support the ones who put on these events for these fighters, folks. Otherwise, we won't have a UFC in 5 years.
Yep. Yep. Very true. Thank you,
hey,
guys,
Gabe,
for
man.
Much
we really
the opportunity coming
on
here.
We look forward to having you back in the future, buddy.
Definitely will, and thank you guys again very much for the opportunity.
Anytime. Hey, folks, we'll play a quick commercial break, a song. We'll be back in about 4 minutes, and we have got us one killer guest coming right up. If you guys don't know Wartime, you're going to meet him. Your mama.
Hey, listen up. If you're in contact sports, the American Dental Association recommends that mouth guards be worn during all heavy contact sports. So do what MMA Meltdown does and contact the best in the biz, Clench Custom Mouth Guards. Clench Custom Mouth Guards fabricates custom mouth guards for all professional and amateur sports, mixed martial arts, boxing, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, basketball, football, lacrosse, hockey, as well as many other sports. These mouth guards are for any sport where any form of contact may occur. Get your custom mouth guard today at GetClinch.com. Again, that's GetClinch.com for all of your mouth guard needs.
Cast Iron Supplements only carries the strongest, most effective products on the market today. With free shipping in the U.S. and only $10 shipping on out-of-country orders, we stand behind the products we promote. For information on wholesale distribution of our lines, visit castironsupplements.com. Cast Iron Supplements.
Well, I don't really care if you hate me just bit of smoke and a whole lot of wine.
All right, folks, that was a little commercial break, a little Hank Williams III to touch it off. Big
shout
out to all our sponsors.
Bro. Hey, yeah, there you go.
I'm going to shout out the sponsors. And you guys out there, especially fighters, I want you guys to know that Jax Media, one of our great sponsors, jaxmedia.ca, they're doing a killer deal for fighters right now. It's a full photos, edited bios, all this, all the information you would want to send to promotions and stuff like that. It's a media kit is basically the best way to call it. But you guys check them out, Max, Jax Media, man. It's a legitimate deal. These guys do great work. Also, big shout out to all our sponsors, Big Teeth Nightclub, Ink Tank Tattoo, Triumph Fitness, Tank Crimes, Vision Smoke Shop and Glass Distribution, Intimidation Clothing, Clinch Custom Mouth Guard, freaking Pro-Am Belt, Never Tap, Hyper Fight, Draco Impact Armor, Jax Media. Who am I forgetting? I think I got them all. Hell yeah, let's quit screwing around. Let's bring in the man himself, Donald Wartime DeNoyer. Welcome to Madhouse Live, brother.
What's up, bro? How are you?
I'm doing great. My co-host ran out of the studio. I think he's still having to smoke a cigarette or pee or something. So right now you're on with me. Let's start the show out by having you tell all the fans worldwide who you are, that what your record is, your gym. Give them the rundown, the little bio on you.
Well, my name is Don DeNoyer. I go by Wartime for a couple of different reasons, mainly you know, I'm still in the military. I've been in the military now about 24 years, Army, as a matter of fact. And as an announcer, my catchphrase is, it's time to go to war. And it's one of those things that I just kind of adopted, and people started calling me Wartime, and it just kind of stuck. I own a gym called, well, I'm a partner in a gym called Central Coast Elite in my hometown. We got about 30 fighters, 30 MMA fighters. I've got a lot of coaches that train my fighters for me because I really don't have a whole lot of time to spend with them. But when I am at home, you know, I will spend a lot of time getting these guys ready for their fights. You know, I'm married, been married now for 21 years. I got a beautiful wife at home with a 17-year-old son who's an asshole like his father. So, you know, kind of that,
that's what
hey,
I'm
well,
that, you, bro.
Well, you know what? It kind of works out well because, you know, I know that my son's going to carry on my legacy, and, you know, so I've got something to look forward to, you know, with that. So, and I, right now, you know, I'm working for a bunch of different promotional companies, traveling around the U.S., announcing for a lot of the MMA organizations, announcing for boxing, and getting ready to head off this weekend and announce the UFC Fan Expo in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand.
Hey, okay, I got two things. First, I want to say thank you for your service.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
But that's going to lead me into my second question because this is really a strange situation that some people tend to bring up, and that's the fact that when they hear people compare a fight to war, and you have people that are typically not soldiers and not fighters saying how disrespectful that is and that they don't know what it's really like to go to a war. As a guy that actually uses that catchphrase and is in the military, what do you think about that? That whole, like, theory or concept?
You know, MMA and boxing and all this stuff, it's all the same mindset. You know, these fighters, it's one thing to sit there and talk about it, whether you're going to box or do MMA or whether you're going to join the military and go put your life on the line for your country. It's all a matter of 50% of it's going to be commitment. It's just committing to that specific thing that you want to do. Comparing the two, apples and oranges. You know, these young men and women who are overseas right now putting their asses on the line to protect this country, it's one of those things where you just don't know what it is until you actually do it. And you bring up a good point, you know. But again, these fighters are jumping in the fucking cage, and they're putting their lives on the line. People don't get it. You know, one kick, one punch, one move, one suplex, just one little bad movement, and that fighter could be done. So, you know, regardless of where they're at or whether it's in a wartime situation, you know, these guys are all putting their lives on the line. But let's not forget the fact that these guys defending us overseas, defending our lives so that we can actually put on these shows and we can actually have MMA events. And so the people who aren't serving, you know, I always like to compare everything to, there's a movie out there, Men in Black, where, you know, they were at the magazine rack and the guy says, American people or anybody in general, they just want to know that they're safe. They don't want to know about the bad shit. And that's the way it is. In war, we don't really talk about it and we don't really tell people how it is to actually be staring down the barrel of you know, with a human being at the other end. We don't talk about it because, you know what, that's our job and we just keep that shit to ourselves, you know?
Yeah, well, yep. I mean, I come from a family with a strong military background, and I have family that's currently in and been to Iraq and Afghanistan and now Syria and Jordan or wherever the hell they are. But I just
thank you for their service.
I think it goes back to, like, this whole thing, like, similar to, like, this shit with, like, the Redskins and how people, like, I don't know why they're not to keep referring to football, but, you know, people are trying to say how the Washington Redskins is, oh, it's so disrespectful. How is that? Like, why isn't it disrespectful for us to mention the Spartans or they're the Trojans, or, oh, they're the fucking, you know, why isn't Pete out talking about the Wildcats or the Tigers and how we disrespect them? It should be a fucking sign of respect, and, like, it's like you said, these guys are all getting in some type of an environment and putting everything on the line, so there are similarities. You know, now granted, in the war combat zone, it's much higher level, much higher, you know, everything's at a higher level. But I've never talked to a soldier that had one complaint about the reference of fighters stepping in and going to war or having a war. It's just people that feel like, oh, that's so disrespectful. It's this whole PC-like environment that we live in currently.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, here's the thing. The only time that I never used the terminology it's time to go to war was in a title fight between an MMA fighter named Sergio Machado. And he's the defending champion, and he was taking on, I can't even remember his name, but in this specific fight, he himself was a combat veteran who had been overseas. He was an infantryman. And his whole platoon was killed, except for him, in a war zone, you know, when they were engaged in a firefight. And out of respect for him, and nobody knew I was going to do it, I didn't need to tell him it's time to go to war. This is a man who deserved respect. This is a man who deserved that respect from me, so I didn't say the catchphrase. You know, just out of respect for him as a soldier. So, but you know what? Everybody has somebody that has somebody that serves in the military, and you know what? We have mad respect for all of them, and that's what I loved about Gabe Scarpelli, the guy that you just had on, is he's a huge supporter of the military. So I just like that.
Okay, now I got to ask you, because I kind of had a chance to talk with you, bullshit with you a little bit more than the average folks, but I know you have some strong feelings about the MMA scene too. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit. I know you fight, and as well as you work with, you know, athletes that are coming up in this sport. And overall, what are you seeing today, and what do you think about the production of MMA, you know, especially where you're at, and what do you see good and bad about it?
You know, I've announced all over the U.S. now, so I've been able to announce for a lot of different organizations, and I really like the direction that I've seen the world of MMA going. You know, we've got a lot of these promoters that are falling by the wayside because they just can't compete with some of the other MMA promoters and some of the other organizations that maybe have a little bit more money to better promote or to better advertise. But like in California, for example, Camo, I think that they've done a pretty good job with what they've done, and the officiating. It's kept fighters from you know, getting injured. It's kept him from, you know, taking an arm bar to a point where the guy gets his arm dislocated and he's out for the next 8-9 months because he has to have surgery, you know, whatever. But the one thing that always has irritated me about camo in California is the fact that they use these rash guards, the fact that they put these advertisements on them, the red and the blue, and I've never liked that because it's really hindering these fighters in regards to them being able to make it to that next level where they don't have to wear that rash guard or where they don't have to put that on. In other states that I go to, you can't even tell if it's an amateur fight or if it's a pro fight, just because of what they allow. Now, in Indiana, they don't allow, you know, head kicks. Here in California, they don't give a fuck if you knock the motherfucker out with a head kick. They really don't give a shit. But
that's,
you know,
how it is here, man. It's fucking awesome.
I mean, I love it. And when I was listening to them give the final instructions, and they said there's no head kicks allowed or whatever, and I had to interject for a second and say, wait a second, you know, I got a question. And he said, you're just the announcer. What's your question? I said, well, I may be dumb and stupid and only in this business for the last 25 some odd years, but why aren't you allowing fighters who are getting ready to make it to that next level not head kick? You're hindering them. You're getting ready to set them up for fucking failure, because when they do go into their first MMA fight, they're going to walk in and get fucking head kicked and get knocked out because they're not used to head kicking. So, you know, that's kind of what I've been seeing, and you know, I hope I was able to answer your question with that.
Yeah, I feel you do. You know, you know me. I like your mentality. I think, you know, you've kind of fit in with the group, you know, that's on the show tonight, me and Lepaki, because we're kind of, you know, opinionated about certain aspects of this sport, good and bad both. And I say, you know, it's great to see the amount of fighters coming up, you know, but at a point, we're starting to get diluted by shitty promoters, small-time crappy gym owners who don't know what they're doing, who are mistraining kids, fighters now who go 8-5 as an amateur and then want to start training other fighters. I mean, there's certain aspects that I see that are hurting the sport, but in general, it's growing the right way. It's just we need to pay attention as a whole and legitimize the real facilities and the real leagues. And you know, shun the people that aren't doing it correctly and the people that aren't out there for the fighter's best interest.
And I completely and absolutely agree with you. I've talked to a lot of my friends all around, and we have these conversations over and over again. And I think the problem that we've been having is a lot of the promoters and a lot of the people that are out there, they're afraid to step on toes. They're afraid to actually speak their mind. And, you know, that's the thing that's been hindering us the most. Is if some of these people would just have a pair of balls and stand up for themselves and just say enough is enough. Like some of the promoters that I do know that I just absolutely love. I mean, these guys are some of the most incredible promoters out there, and they don't have, you know, they don't have a problem with speaking their mind. So, you know, I think that's what everybody needs to do. They just need to speak their mind. They need to just, you know, help the other people. You know, let me ask you a question. Have you seen another promoter actually show up to another show and help another promoter to be successful?
It's funny. We know a few promoters, believe it or not, that actually work together, not only with matchmaking and helping fill fight cards, but it's very, very rare.
I mean, it's starting to get to the point, though, where I'm seeing more promoters work together in certain aspects to where they're like, let's, like, look at when we want to put on shows so that they're not, like, trying to compete with each other for, you know. I mean, it's definitely slowly coming around, but I do remember the days when there was, like, it was, like, fucking pulling teeth trying to get information from people because they didn't want somebody else to find out.
Well, you've got Jane Estiogo. She is a matchmaker and a gym owner for Kung Lee, and she's somebody that I admire so much because she is somebody that works her ass off to promote Born to Fight, and she puts on these great MMA series for Kung Lee, and she will be the first one to drop everything that she's doing to go help another promoter to make sure that, that his promotion is successful, and she doesn't ask for a cent. She doesn't ask for anything. And she said it best. She said, the promoters who are around me that are able to be successful are going to make my show more successful just because of the fact that people don't really look at an MMA series or a show and say, oh, well, that's so-and-so's show. You know, I want to go help that. I want to go to that one, or I want to go to this one, or I want to go to that one. If people in a specific area just love MMA because it's been promoted really well, everybody will go watch. But it takes one dirtbag promoter to do a fucked up show to ruin it for every other promoter in that area. So, you know, it's like you've got Jane Estioka, you got Mike McNeil, you've got Gabe Scarpelli, Anthony Aria, you've got all these promoters in that specific area who all will work together to make themselves successful, and it just makes it that much easier for everybody.
Totally agree. And that's something like, you know, I don't know how much you know about some of the leagues on the West Coast or the East Coast, but, you know, XFC, a larger league, you know, that's growing and growing, they work with, I think it's World Class Fight League out of Florida to help bring up amateur athletes to their pro level. You know, that's, you know, we're starting to see it more and more, but not near enough. Because if you did that on a major scale, the shitty promoters would not be around because no one would work with them after the first time they fucking screwed over the fighters or ripped off the box or whatever it is.
But that's how you weed out the bad ones. If you get involved in everybody else's business, you're going to know, you know, whether or not this is going to be somebody you're going to want to work with. You can't sit back and let somebody put on a show and then talk shit about it if you weren't involved or if you didn't go to it, you know? You're just not going to be able to decipher who the dirtbags are that are putting on these bad shows. So you have to have firsthand knowledge. You've got to be the one getting off your ass and going and looking at the other shows and seeing what you can do to be involved. Because you know what? You just might find something that they do that will work better for your show, and you might have something to help them out to make them better for that show. So, you know, I don't know if I'm being a dickhead by saying that, but I think, you know, I'm kind of Rodney King in it. I think we should all get along.
I agree.
No, I definitely think you're for sure there.
Now, hey, let me ask you, you know, with your ability not only as a fighter and a coach, but I think the coolest thing you do, which is, you know, being a ring announcer, you've got to come across not only some great amateur and pro fighters and great promoters, but just what, 6-7 days ago, you got to interview Gracie down there at Showdown in Surftown, am I right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was a pretty cool experience. There was three UFC fighters who were there. Luke Rockhold, Gray Maynard, interviewed those two guys, but I got to, you know, interview Hoyce Gracie, and I got to ask him some pretty candid questions. And you know, the main thing that I wanted to find out from him is what was it that made him successful, and what advice did he have for the fighters themselves. And he was very, very upfront in saying you have to believe in yourself and you have to train. No excuses. And if you lose, you get up and you train even harder, you know. And when I asked him, I said, look, I said, you're the man. You started all of this. You are the guy. You are the reason why we are here today. And he flat out looked at me and he said, nope, the reason why we're here today is because of my family. My family's the one that started this. I just happened to be able to benefit from it. And I felt that was the most humbling experience for me.
Dude, that's pretty sick. I mean, just to be able to interview him, I mean, as somebody who does what I do, that's you know, one of the pinnacles, man, to be able to sit down and talk with that cat.
I sat there and I did joke around a little bit afterwards and say, you know, I think I could take him, man. You know, he's my height, same body style, same build. And then I remembered that 385-pound Samoan that probably was thinking the same thing about it and, you know, got his ass kicked by him. But, you know, when you come in and you win UFC 1, 2, 4, 7, you know, and all these multiple championships, and you are, you know, you hold the record for the most submissions in the UFC, and you know, you've got all these different things going for you. You know, the man himself was one of the most humbling guys that I can ever remember, you know, interviewing either in the cage or outside the ring or whatever, from any champion out there that I've ever spoken with. He was very humble, you know, and I kind of joked around because Luke Rockhold was there, and, you know, I talked him out a little bit about being an undefeated fighter in Strikeforce, and then his first fight in the UFC, you know, he happens to lose, and I'm like, well, you know, like, maybe you weren't as good as you thought you were or whatever, but I just couldn't get over the fact that Luke Rockhold was a fucking, you know, a freaking awesome, amazing, handsome-looking guy, and I'm sitting there looking at him thinking to myself, wow. You know, this guy's a fighter. I mean, he's such a good-looking guy. He was making me nervous, you know. And then you get Gray Maynard, who's 5'3.5", and got cauliflower ears, and, you know, another really nice guy. And I'll tell you, Showdown in Surftown, you know, Francis Farley, those guys right there, they put on a great show over there at the Pavilion in Santa Cruz. It was another great show for those guys.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, it's definitely a cool gig, man, being able to rock it around the country and not only see all these fights, but, you know, interview different people at the different levels, man, plus your own career, plus what you do for us as a country. I mean, all around, just a cool motherfucker, dude. I got to give you big props, man. And I got to tell you, I really appreciate you taking the time to kick it with us tonight. Why don't you take this time and give out any shout-outs, any social media information, whatever you want.
Well, I got to first thank my wife for sticking up with me. I'm the biggest asshole there probably is out there, because I take off. I mean, I'm leaving on the 4th of July to go to Vegas to announce a show over there for the UFC Grapplers Quest for the Fan Expo. And so, you know, I got to thank her first for supporting me, my 17-year-old asshole son, you know, who's grown up to be just like me. But, you know, all the promoters out there that have given me the opportunities, Anthony Urrea with California Fight Syndicate, Mike McNeil, who believed in me, gave me all the opportunities I could ever ask for, Dave Scarpelli, Jane Estioka, you know, James Jenna, who's you know, going to be having me fly all over the fucking country announcing boxing for him. And all the fans out there who've given me the opportunity to showcase my talents, who, you know, texted me and let me know that they love me, calling me the next Bruce Buffer, and, you know, which really pisses me off, because I think I'm 20 times better than him. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Bruce, if you're listening, I'm just fucking with you, Ed. I'm fucking with you. I'm going to be out in Vegas, and I, you know, hey. They can easily put a hit on you out there in Vegas, so I'm just messing with you. Hey, you know, you know, Jimmy Lennon Jr., who gave me tons of advice when I first started out in this business, and who was humble enough to hand the microphone over to me when I said that I was better than him, and let me get in the ring to prove it. And, you know, just it's – this business that we're in is a business of hard knocks, man. You have to go out there and you have to give it 120% every single time that you're out. And it's staying humble. It's understanding that you're just you're one step away from either screwing yourself, or you're one step away from being the greatest person out there that you could possibly be. And, you know, I just pray to God every day that I'm one step away from being the best announcer in the world, and people recognizing my talents and hiring me for, you know, not because I may be an asshole in person or whatever, but because I'm the best announcer out there, and because they know that when I come to do their show that they can sit back and enjoy and watch me help them grow. I mean, that's all I've ever wanted. These fighters deserve somebody out there making them feel like every fight that they're in is a championship fight, just because, you know, we admire and respect everybody that steps into either the ring or the cage. And when I step in front of them and I start announcing, they deserve that. They deserve to walk out of that cage, win, lose, or draw, and know that they were at the best event and the best show that they could possibly be involved in.
And that's great, brother. And I'm just going to set some records straight for some people out there. In my not-so-humble opinion, Lenny Hart, far superior of a ring announcer to Bruce Buffer, 7 days a week and twice on Sunday. And if anybody disagrees with me, come on down. But watch out for my man Donald. Donald, we appreciate you coming on the show. Now you have to answer the question everybody's answered tonight. And is it going to be Chris Weidman or Anderson Silva?
Wow. I want Chris to win just because of the fact that I love going against the grain. And I always want the underdog to win. And I just think it's time for a new champion. But in my honest and humble opinion, I feel that Anderson Silva is about 2 years away from ever losing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it would be neat to see Chris win, but I don't know. And I'm not sure we can say it's against the grain with this one, because everybody I talk to, they're like, a lot of people are saying, oh, Weidman's easily going to beat him. He's got great jiu-jitsu. And I'm like sitting there thinking to myself, Anderson Silva has 11 knockouts and 3 submissions in the UFC and hasn't submitted anybody since Chael Sonnen number 1. He's on a five-fight KO streak.
But you know what? It's almost like what I do as a Raider fan. I sit there every year. Oh, man, fuck, this is the time. Oh, we're going to win this game. Oh, you know what? It's our time, man. We're going to win the Super Bowl this year. We're going to this. We're going to that. And you know what? Does it ever happen? No. And, you know, am I ever disappointed? No, hell no, I'm not disappointed, because I'm a true fan. And win, lose, or draw, I'm going to still support my team. So for all the Anderson Silva fans and the Chris fans and everybody out there, it's like, you know, I would love to see Chris win just because he's a great guy and he's a humble guy and he's a nice guy, and I'd like to see him go out and knock him the fuck out. But is it going to happen? I don't think it's going to happen. You know, Anderson Silva is just a freaking – he is an animal. So I want Anderson Silva, though. I'd like to see him showcase a little bit more and be more of an exciting fighter, because the thing that pisses me off the most about him is just the fact that he, in fights, he's such a talented guy – but at times he'll get lackadaisical and he'll just sit back and he'll just play with the guy. Don't play with him. Knock him the fuck out. Give the fans what they want and be a knockout artist.
Well,
I definitely
think we're going to see something impressive this weekend. I think this might be one of those times where Anderson just lets it all go and he goes Neo.
I hope that's so.
What I think is going to happen. What? Hey, Donald, we really appreciate you taking the time tonight, man. We look forward to talking to you again in the future. One of these Friday nights when you're sitting in some odd city and it's midnight, 10 o'clock, depending on what coast you're on, man, you got to come on the Rogue Show, dude, the other show we run. And folks out there, Saturday night, don't forget, you don't miss Full Guard Fight Radio with Carl the Madman and Mr. London himself.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, guys.
Hey, man, thanks, bro. And we look forward to seeing you at an event, man. Try to get up to the PAC Northwest.
When's that? Yeah, just send me all the info on everything, and I'll definitely be out there. And any promoters that are looking for an announcer to take them to the next level, man, you know, I'm not expensive and I'm not cheap, but I'm just right.
Yeah, definitely, man. I'll get your information.
Skippy's awesome.
Got
thanks,
it.
Guys.
Hey, thanks. Dude, that guy, man, dude, high energy. Hard to keep up with that guy. Fuck, I can only imagine him as the ring announcer, bro. I hope you're not really talking to me and you're on the phone with somebody, because nobody can hear you. Apparently Skippy's talking to somebody on the phone and he just doesn't happen to say anything to anybody. So outside of the fight we've been talking about all night, tomorrow is Pro FC 49 at 8 o'clock in the morning, people. Alexander Emelianenko versus Jose Gwelki. Probably be another quick first-round knockout for Alexander. It's going to be a cool little card. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 fights, 8 o'clock in the morning. And Pro FC usually has a stream somewhere. I would probably go look at Rear Naked Smoke. That tends to be the spot to find the links at and be able to watch some of this international MMA. If not there, you guys can always go to, like, Front Row
basket first weaving row. And watch there. No, I know the name, but I didn't want to, like, blow it out, you know, as, like, I was putting out code words, man. Code words, man. Come on. Go with it. I guess we have our last guest of the night, and we are staying local this time in the Pacific Northwest, a place I will be at Saturday night, the Emerald Queen Casino in Tacoma, not in Fife. The big night of fights, and we got the matchmaker from Cage Sport right here with us, Rich Guerin. Rich, how you doing today?
Hello?
Rich, how are you doing today?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, buddy. How's it going for you on your end?
Not too bad, man. Just excited, waiting for this show to happen.
What's fight week like for the matchmaker? Are you on pins and needles, just hoping you don't get that call, I'm out of the fights?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think maker, whether from grassroots level amateur MMA, clear up to Sean Shelby and Joel Silva probably the week before the fights, is just nail-biting time.
Now, you did get an unfortunate situation over the weekend. You were able to fastly get that fixed and rematched. What did you think getting that phone call Sunday about Justin Davis?
I was pretty upset, to say the least. But with the regional scene level fighters, they're always looking for the next best or biggest thing or a way to make money. I mean, I don't condone it in any way, but I see where the mentality of some of these young fighters who are trying to, you know, make a little bit of a living out of this. By no means do I excuse it or say, oh, it's cool, but it is what it is in that regard, and it's unfortunate. I never did anything like that in my day as a fighter, but the way I looked at it is if I made a commitment to a promotion, I was going to follow through no matter if a better paying or you know, better opportunities supposedly come up. I felt like this was a chance for Justin to make his comeback, kind of, because it's been a while since he's been in the cage.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not like he went out and took it. He didn't really go take a fight with just an average Joe either out there. I mean, I don't know if anybody here in this part of the country is familiar with Max Nunez, but that dude's a fucking killer.
Yeah. Yeah, he's totally boss bet. From what I understand, it was a five-pound match, wasn't it?
It was a what?
It was a light heavyweight fight, too, I believe,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
No, yeah.
Yeah,
it was.
So,
205.
I mean, Justin's not even my size. And, I mean, I was by no means a big middleweight. So, and him not coming from any kind of a wrestling background, you know. So, yeah, poor mistake. It definitely broke my heart for the card a little bit, but, you know, we came around and made it work.
Yeah, now you've got what I think is a little bit, hold on, is a little bit more intriguing fight with Josh Houston and Alfonso, both of them having the undefeated thing going on. Do you kind of maybe get that same feeling? This might be a little bit more buzz around the community, the MMA community up there with the two guys that are both undefeated?
Definitely. I feel like you know, it's not or a guy trying to kind of restart his career over. This is two young prospects. Both of them are tough. Both of them are somewhat untested. Alfonso had a pretty rough and tough last fight. Severe and
yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things. I actually, looking back at it, and when Bart Smith brought the idea up, I was actually very intrigued and happy about it. Well, no, happy about Justin, but, you know.
Yeah, but when you get a fighter like Josh who you call and he steps up and he's like, I'll take it, how encouraging is that for you to see that come out of that camp?
Oh, it's a huge thing for me, and what it does is it tells me that he's a gamer, and the regional scene.
Did we lose Skippy?
We're losing.
Yeah, okay, we lost you for a second there. You want to? Yeah, can you hear us now?
Yeah, I hear you guys fine.
Okay, cool. You want to start over again? I apologize. I think we just had a bad connection.
Yeah, I just, as I was saying, it was very encouraging when he stepped up, and I applaud Bart for helping me make that match take place. And, you know, it lets me know that this guy is going to be something possibly special in the future, because he's willing to put his perfect 3-0 record on the line against an undoubtedly tough opponent. And, you know, it's encouraging to know that there's still those young guys coming up that are kind of relatively unknown that are willing to step up and go out there and fight tough on short notice. And this is where they're getting their chops for the future, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Or finding out there is no future.
Yeah,
what was that?
That's very true.
Or they find out there is no future. You know, that's kind of like a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
No,
I want to go ahead,
Rich.
I think for a guy who really is a fighter down deep in his heart, I think it takes more than one or two bad experiences to make them. And sometimes nobody, you know, sometimes somebody doesn't. A person doesn't ever learn and figure out that this really isn't what, you know, I should be doing. Just because you're a fighter at heart doesn't mean you're a great fighter at heart, you know.
That's true. Now, I got to ask you, you got a fight on this card that I'm kind of interested about, and I'd like to know how it came together, and that's the Lopez-Atkinson fight.
Well, you know, I know Nick Gelardi well, known him since kind of back in the day. I was a fighter, and he was a younger fighter. And, you know, I've seen at regional amateur team, saw him come up a little bit. It would be great for Dope. And so, good stuff.
We're losing you again, brother.
Oh, you guys are losing me? How about
now? There we go. We can
hear him. Maybe he's outside.
Hey, what's
that?
Yeah,
I mean, I know that Nick Gelardi brings really tough dudes up to Cage Sport. I mean, to wherever he's going, he's bringing some really tough guys. They're really well coached, and Nick Gelardi, in my opinion, it's a coin toss, really, between, I think, him and probably Landon Showalter is who may be the best in the corner.
Yeah, they're, you know, but, I mean, when you look at the fact that both of them came from kind of the old school of MMA, they have that ability from, you know, having every living every aspect of the game, from fighter to spit bucket carrier to hand wrapper to coach to you name it.
Yeah.
You know, and that pays dividends. And I think that kind of coming from that background for me is one of the reasons why I've seen some success as a coach from, you know, the grassroots all clear up to the UFC level is, you know, having had lived a life from every aspect of the game.
And that's going to be a tough fight for Gustavo.
Yeah, I think it's a tough competitive fight for both of them. Gustavo's last fight was actually against a guy almost two weight divisions above him. Gustavo was kind of, he wasn't at home training with his camp. He was training at Fairtex Gym, just doing classes, not doing training with the fighters. So he definitely was not prepared for that fight. It was not the most, and that's not taking anything away from the guy he fought. It's just, I'm just saying that Gustavo's the kind of guy that's first at the gym, last to go home. I got to kick him out. And I think his enthusiasm to fight led him into a situation he shouldn't have got into.
The thing I noticed, Rich, was that it looked like he wasn't really wanting to listen to the corner a lot. Because there was times where I thought, like, he was just about to take control of the fight, and then he would kind of, like, freestyle for a second, and then it would kind of, like, be like take a step back in the fight. And
then he'd be kind of scrambling back out.
Yeah, a lot of that's to do with the fact that him being gone for 4 or 5 months, you know, away at college, finished wrestling season, hasn't been in the gym with his team, and, you know, just that familiarity of hearing my voice or whomever else is with me cornering him, screaming, yelling, giving commands, wasn't jiving with him. I don't know any other way to put it. I think that, you know, it's just one of those things. But it didn't slow him down a bit, and he's, you know, that person's a mirror image of what, or not even close to a mirror image of who he is now, as far as, you know, he's had a long fight camp, he's strong, he's in shape, he's cued into me and the other cornermen. So I think it's going to be a lot like his first pro fight where he was basically really, really prepared for it and dialed in. I'm excited for it. I don't ever look to get any guy that trains with me or that I'm close to in any way, shape, or form a gimme or an easy fight. It doesn't always work out to where it looks that way, but I can't always help the skill level of my guy versus the next. But, you know, this is one of those things.
That's something that's important that I think we should touch on. Not only as somebody who trains athletes, but you're a matchmaker for one of the premier organizations up here in the Pacific Northwest. How much validity do you give to independent fighters?
And no disrespect to them, but it's really hard to know what an independent's bringing when I don't have somebody that I respect and know as a coach to give me the inside beat on them. So I don't really have a lot of independent guys I work with.
You know, you see it as well as I do. Some of the different events out there bring in 2, 3, sometimes 4 independent fighters that don't have a facility or a gym that they're repping. Now, like you just touched on, the ability, not only as a gym owner, but a matchmaker, to know all the gyms in your area and in your region and to be able to sit down and talk with them and find out about your fighters. Do you think independent fighters should be given a shot on a bigger organization, or do you think, look, get to a gym, then we can talk?
I think it depends on, if an independent fighter that comes out of nowhere, out of the woodwork, and there's nothing on them, I would not feel comfortable putting them on the hot seat. But if he's an independent that by some miracle has made a little name on the scene for himself by beating real game opponents, I wouldn't have a problem there. But once again, if I don't have anything to go on, I'm real nervous about it. And I would not want to be known as the promoter that just throws just anybody in there. And even good fighters go out and fall on their face and look horrible sometimes.
Yeah, totally agree. With your ability to matchmake, and obviously you've got some great fights on this card, there's one fight that a lot of people have been clamming about for a couple of, year and a half roughly. It's finally going to happen. I got to ask you, how ready is Julian?
He's as ready as he can be. He's had a good, long, well put together fight camp. Every fighter and every coach is going to say this is the greatest fight camp I've ever had, blah, blah, blah. But quite honestly, I'm very happy, very confident. By no means looking past Lee. I think anybody, no matter who they are, if they look past Lee, they're sadly mistaken. I don't look past a wrestler ever. And so we're excited and can't wait for it to happen, honestly. And this has been a fight that myself included has pushed to try and get. And, it just took some time. For whatever reason, it's had to wait until now, and I'm sure both fighters are going to be completely ready for it. Neither guy better be overlooking the other.
Well, yeah, and now I've got to ask, especially because you get to have that one-on-one time with Julian, because of all the hype each time around that they tried to put this together, and it's finally, has he mentally looked at this different than he has other fights?
Oh yeah, he you know, he looks at it like this is really going to be the test for him. You know, he's fought some tough guys before, but this is a guy who, just like Julian and Drew and a few other guys in the Northwest, could easily be fighting in the UFC. So this right here is a personal goal for him to face somebody like Lee and persevere through it. So Julian's just the kind of guy that the tougher the challenge, the better he stands up to it usually. And he's excited. You know, it didn't take even 1 ounce of convincing when this fight was brought to him at all.
Okay, well, let's talk convincing a fight. I'm curious. It's a fight that is another big fight on this card, and that's going to be Drew Brokenshire versus Shorty. You know, how did that come together, and how much convincing did it take on the parties?
There was relatively no convincing. I just kind of spent some time looking around the Northwest to see who, because the idea was to take four of the best, if not four, the four best 145 pounders in the Northwest, and have them fight it out, and you know, eventually the two guys that won will face each other, and it'll be the undisputed 145 pounder in the Northwest. And neither guy had to be convinced to fight. Both guys wanted it.
Now, Rich, is it it's conceivable maybe that the loser of Erosa Morrison could get the next title shot with the winner of that fight? I feel probably moving maybe up a level.
Yeah, well,
and like taking a step up.
It's like not conceivable. It is going to happen. The guy that wins this fight between Julian and Lee, the guy that wins that goes on to fight Drew. And if by some chance the winner of that fight gets picked up by, you know, somebody bigger than us, then that's really what, you know, in essence, cage sport's all about. I mean, Brian and myself love that we've had well over 30 individuals fight in cage sport that directly went to the UFC, Bellator, or Strikeforce.
And that's what I like about what you guys are doing, is that you're not afraid to let guys advance their career and just have them while you have them, rather than try to tie them up and hold them like a hostage, like certain promotions I don't want to mention right now.
Yeah, it doesn't do us any good. And I mean, do I want Lee Morrison or Drew Brokenshire or Julian saying, yeah, I'd love to be fighting at the next level on TV or pay-per-view in the UFC or whichever, but unfortunately, my promotion that I fight for now won't release me. And Brian and I have, I mean, most, you know, Brian's policy is if the UFC calls and it's just one of the guys that fights for our show, they have a clause to leave. It's unfortunate, and sometimes it's you know, it's a little sad for us to have to see a guy go down the road and not fight and represent the show anymore, but you know what? That's really what it's about. And that's pretty awesome to say this guy, that guy, this guy, that guy, that gal all started or at least frequented the K-Sport shows several times and through their hard work at K-Sport ended up getting in the big show. That by no means at all is a hindrance or a thorn in Brian and I's side. I know that. It's a feather in our hat, actually.
Well, speaking of Brian, I got to ask you, were you pumped or were you like, wow, man, that's a lot of work come next year, seeing that press release that came out today about the new schedule? I believe you guys fight January between the two events, Battle on the Boat and Cage Sport. There's an event like almost every single month. So that means you have, what, 5 or 6 cage sports next year to start matchmaking for?
I'm pumped. It just means I get
all
to do more of the work
like
that I love
to
do.
It's like I'm still employed in this economy. Are you crazy? Of course I'm excited.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's great.
I love matchmaking, and I've already started putting ideas together for the next show. And, you know, so it's obviously a job I love. So, shoot, give me one show a month. Give me one cage sport a month. I'll be happy.
What?
You know,
and if for fans out there, you're running in February 8th, March or May 3rd, then you got July 19th, you got October 4th, December 12th, already all locked down on the books, ready to start filling. Man, that has got to be just a great feeling that the promotion is doing so well, and it has to come back to a base of two things: the product, which comes from matchmaking, and the ability to promote those events, which comes down to media and social savvy fighters. So you've got to feel like the matchmaking part, which is on you, is coming together great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the ability for us to do the very best we can with the fighters makes my job easier. It's not like I have to convince guys to come fight for us, so that does make it nice. So, you know, it's just nice. I mean, fighters take a look at the show and see it's all pro. They see that, you know, they get a big red sanction line through their fight record when they fight for us, just like they get when they fight in the UFC. So, you know, it's exciting. It's exciting. And Ryan and I would love to see this thing get even bigger.
Now, Rich,
have you guys found anybody for
RJ Murphy to fight?
Yes, actually. That's in the works right now. Till I get a contract out, I don't want to say nothing.
No, that's all, no, definitely understandable.
I don't want to jinx myself, if you know what I mean. So
no, definitely understandable.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm doing everything in my power to make sure that RJ gets to follow through and fight this weekend. And I like RJ a lot. From what I know, he's a good kid. And he came down and trained at my gym for just a little bit this weekend and seemed like a pretty nice, young, respectful guy. So from what I know.
Dude, he just put on one hell of a fight at Cage Warrior Combat 5, Rich, that if it wasn't for a referee making a bad mistake and stopping a fight when he shouldn't have to look at a cut, I fully think that RJ Murphy would not be 1-3-1 right now. He'd be 2-2-1. And at this point, that fight is my fight of the year. And RJ Murphy, and I can't think of the other guy's name, I'm trying to remember.
Wasn't it Lupe Hutchins?
Yeah, Lupe. Him and Lupe. That was a freaking war, bro. That was a great fight. And when RJ hit him with that knee, if he could have had the time before the ref stepped in to stop that fight to try and finish that, I think that that was the point that it could have happened. Because when that fight stopped and I saw Lupe and I looked him in the eyes when he was sitting there on the mat for a second, you could tell that he was far, far away from Kingston, Washington.
That's what I hear. I heard that was an absolute war.
Now, hold on,
before you go too far into this, look, let me give a shout-out so that we can go into overtime because we're about to. Big shout-out to all our sponsors, folks out there. Jax Media right now is doing a 4-page fighter media kit. Go to jaxmedia.ca. Check out what this kit offers. It's amazing. Let me give a big sponsor call, and we'll be right back in 30
MMA
seconds.
MMAMadhouse.com would like to thank their sponsors. Draco Impact Armor. Clench Custom Mouthguards. Cast Iron Supplements. Brawl Base. Pro-Am Belts. Game Changer Clothing. Never Tap. Hype Fight Store. Intimidation Clothing. Ink Tank Tattoo. 24 in LV. Crossroader Clothing. Central Oregon Trike. Triumph Fitness. Vision Smoke Shop. Tank Crimes. Big T's Nightclub. And ACS Live TV.
Thank you to all our great sponsors. We got folks, if you're out there, you got about a minute to call in 310-742-1799 to listen to Overtime or check out the replay. All the Overtime will be there. Okay, LaPocky, I'm sorry. Back to what you were saying, brother.
Now, hey, Rich, I'm just glad to see that you guys brought the ladies back for this cage sport. Interested to see Hadley and Alicia lock it up.
Yeah, it's going to be, and these are not two girls that you know, or just kind of trying MMA out. They both come from good camps. They're serious fighters. This should be exciting. It should be every bit as good a fight as any one of the men's fights that night, for sure. At least as good.
Well, I'm still waiting to see Thea Wolf back in there. Hopefully she can overcome that knee injury because her and Sarah Lagerstrom put one hell of a fight on.
Oh, I know. Believe me, it's the amount of female fights we have on our show is not for lack of trying, I'll tell you. There's just not as much
I'm not saying talent. There's just not as many female fighters in enough weight classes for me to get too crazy doing it. But gosh, we love our women's weight classes or fight MMA division. It's just it's one of those things, you know. It's not like the men's divisions where if there's an injury, I can just okay by the end of the day I'll have a replacement. You know, I mean, you guys know that as well as I do. There's just not a lot of to choose from out there.
No, yeah, and I think it is growing. I think that there's a lot more young amateur ladies out there across the weight classes that we're starting to see come up. Girls like Stevie Van Ashy and Katie Batara, and you know some of those girls.
Oh yeah, it's coming. There's talent coming, and you know the generation after that. You know, you got girls like my daughter who's 13 now. And, you know, God's been training since she's 4, you know, the level that those little gals are going to fight out is going to be amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Don't know
that I'll
be
matched with
my daughter, though.
Isn't it kind of neat, though? I mean, Rich, we're in a really, like, peculiar position because a lot, you know, people like us have been watching since the beginning of MMA. And, you know, or and go back to maybe boxing and just think, dude, where we'll be at in 20 years and we're having these conversations about, man, can you believe when this guy came in and he only knew Brazilian jiu-jitsu?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And we won't be saying shit like that anymore.
No. You know, you're gonna see a time and a level where every fighter is of the caliber of what people consider GSP, where they're well-rounded, they're wrestling is legit. They're striking, they're jiu-jitsu.
I got to ask you, and it's only because I'm a fan, you know, old school, but today's Russian Sambo, the combat style that it's starting to become really prevalent in Europe and in Russia and even in Asia, how much validity do you give to that as a coach? Have you checked it out? Have you got to train in it? What do you think of it?
As a coach, I'm one of the biggest plagiarists you've ever seen. As far as I'm out there looking, you know, I do my best to get fresh new looks with other gyms, fighters, trainers, whatever. But I can honestly say I don't have a very good grasp of what the heck exactly makes Sambo so much different from what we do now. I know there's a lot of talk about it. You know, I know they like to specialize a lot in leg locks and whatnot, but I could not give you an educated breakdown of if that's something I should be really rushing up on or what. It's something I know I've put in my list of things that I'd like to really study a little bit to, you know, get a good idea if there's something there that we could pick up, get better at. And the way I look at it is you can never stop learning ever. You'll fall behind quick.
I'm a fan of it because it's basically jiu-jitsu gi style from the waist up with punching, and they throw on headgear, but it's kind of like a combat jiu-jitsu, you know. It's a lot of striking involved mixed with jiu-jitsu, you know, basically is the premise. Obviously, Sambo is a little different of a sport with certain movements and techniques, but it's the gist of it, and I like it. I like watching. I think it's an exciting sport, but I also like watching, you know, die fighting at 4 a.m., you know, in Bangkok. So, I mean, I watch it all. But I'm
right.
Curious as a coach, because you do deal with such a variety of athletes. You do have athletes who come in and train. You have athletes who, you know, obviously cross-train in your local town, and then who come from out of state. So, you know, I know your mind's always trying to learn. I was just curious what your thoughts were.
Yeah, it's definitely, there's really nothing that comes down the line that, in my mind, the kind of coach that grows with every year comes by, that if they're not out there looking, investigating, breaking down and seeing what we can use from it, then you're not the kind of coach that coach is going to be around with and growing and constantly developing new fighters. And what we've seen, some of the old school coaches out there that used to have dominant gyms, where are they now? They have no new, fresh fighters.
you know, they kind of fell by the wayside because they're so stuck in their own stylistic ways that I kind of consider myself a change master as much as I can be when it comes to coaching and teaching and even in my own grappling and workouts that I do.
I think that's awesome. I also think that, you know, like a constant change, like what you got, you know, you mentioned earlier when you guys enjoy having guys go to the next level. I think having that constant change of top level fighters that are different, constantly flowing through, really helps you guys out in the way you're growing as well. You know, and like you said, that the ability to say we've helped, you know, propel these guys to the UFC, the Strike Forces, the ONE FCs, you know, wherever. Jungle fights, if it may be. But, you know, just providing that opportunity and being able to do that for fighters is great. And I look forward to every Cage Sport. Now, I'm wondering if at Cage Sport 26, will I be able to see Jared Torgerson maybe in the Cage Sport cage?
You know, anything's possible. I you know, Jared knows I dig him a lot as a fighter. I know him well. I definitely have no problem putting him actually almost accomplished that here a show or two ago, and he was already booked to fight elsewhere. You know, and so it's definitely a trust. It's a lot to Lee, Julian, both to fight, you know. Everything to a line.
Yeah, and now,
you know,
what do you think
put together.
What do you think the odds of us seeing Scott McDonald back in the Cage Sport cage are? Because that was one of the most dominant debuts, Rich, that I have seen in a long time, and Paul Njoku is no cupcake or anything like that, but I thought Scott McDonald just kind of walked through him like a wet paper bag.
Yeah, well, we were all impressed by McDonald. I'd love to have him back, and it's very possible. It just depends on what can come up between his coach and us. We love working with Matt Hume. And so, you know, it's a very, very strong possibility to be back.
Yeah, I mean, I just want people to understand, these are the kind of fighters that you can see there. I mean, you know, if we never see Scott McDonald fight locally again, which I could be a possibility, I mean, because we all know what we saw, we will be able to at least say we saw him at Cage Sport.
Right.
Back before anybody knew about Scott McDonald, me and Rich Guerin are having a conversation about him. Everybody can look back on this radio show right here and find out the truth already. That kid was
legit.
That's
why we like having Rich on. He gives us the inside. We're able to sit down and talk to him and throw these questions at him and get a real, real feel of what the local scene is producing at the Emerald Queen with Cage Sport MMA. And Rich, you know, once again, man, we love the fact that you come and you kick back for, you know, 40 minutes and hang out with us and are willing on Fight Week with everything going on to sit down and talk Cage Sport MMA. Man, I want you to have a chance. Any shout-outs, gyms, events, sponsors, fighters, whatever you want, social media, web addresses, take your time. It's your time. Oh, shit. We lost them. Oh, that sucks. I just looked over. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to give Rich Guerin a big shout-out. Everybody go to Yakima MMA on Facebook. Google them. You can find them anywhere. That's a great gym. If you're ever in the area, stop by. Take a day. Train with these guys. If you're traveling around, you're on vacation, salmon fishing in the Pacific Northwest. I don't know what else they do out there, but also, this event, folks, coming up, Cage Sport is going to have one ridiculously stacked card. Cage Sport 25 is Saturday at the Emerald Queen Casino. You guys get out there and check it out. You guys can get tickets. You guys, the Cage Sport featherweight title, I believe, that's the featherweight title that's up that night, which would be a great fight. So, folks, get out there and check them out. Everybody out there, man, we appreciate you guys tuning in tonight. We thank all our guests. Joe Warden, Gabe Scarpelli from World Combat Series, also Donald Wartime Denoyer, and Rich Guerin from Yakima MMA and Cage Sport MMA Matchmaker. thank you, all you guys. Lepaki, you got anything you want to throw out there? Should I just mute you like an asshole?
Dude, you're why are you ending the show, asshole? The people were having fun, man. The people were not done listening to me.
I didn't hang up on him. You act like I did that shit on purpose.
No, I'm talking about now you're wrapping up the whole show.
Go back to sleep.
Dude, this ain't Friday night, bro.
I wonder how many people listen to that show.
Yet.
I wonder how many people listened to that show.
Three.
And waited for after the music was done playing to hear you continue sleep on live air for 2 fucking minutes.
Hell yeah. Fuck, I slept the whole night, bro. I slept 10 hours. 2 minutes.
Well,
you missed out on the whole 10 hours.
Hey, big shout out to all our sponsors again.
Do you want the most stylish MMA apparel without paying ridiculous prices? Check out IntimidationClothing.com for great original styles of t-shirts, hoodies, and more. IntimidationClothing.com features affordable, premium quality products for men and women. Intimidation is one of the fastest growing MMA apparel companies in the world. Log on today at IntimidationClothing.com. Be the intimidator. Intimidation Clothing.
Dude, if you've been wondering where to find the largest selection of custom glass products in Central Oregon, wonder no more. At Vision Smoke Shop, located on Southwest 6th in Redmond, they feature one-of-a-kind stuff from 16 local glass blowers. They don't only blow glass, they blow your mind, man. They got great prices on hookah products and tobacco, too, so stick that in your pipe and smoke it. Literally, the friendly staff can educate you. They'll be happy to get you up to speed on everything Vision Smoke Shop has to offer. Thinking your hectic disc golf schedule might make it tough to stop by? They understand. And at Visions, they've got everything you need to make your disc golf experience perfect. So it's worth your trip, because if there's one thing they don't like to see wasted, it's time. While you're there, be sure to check out the selection of custom painted longboards. Visit facebook.com/visionsmoke for a first-hand look at some of their unique items. Their prices are already affordable, and they also give a 10% discount to OMMP cardholders, because if there's another thing they don't like to see wasted, it's money. What do they like to see wasted? Well, you figure that one out. Vision Smoke Shop, located in downtown Redmond, the glassiest place in Central Oregon.